CliffCentral.com. Good morning, ladies, gentlemen, animals, everybody. I can feel it getting warmer. I do like this. You know, I feel sorry for myself around this time of year because it's the birthday and everything. But then I suddenly realize, like, actually, maybe it is a bit of a blessing in disguise because being born in sort of the end of winter, beginning of spring, it's like probably the best time you could choose, really. So when I feel bad about August, I just think about the fact, well, you know, technically I'm kind of right at the edge of August, so maybe September's really my month. But your head will play tricks on you, and you'll end up believing anything that you put out there as propaganda.
Let me tell you something that'll freak you out if you're already feeling sorry about growing a year older.
Yeah.
I saw a meme the other day that says 2050.
Oh, it's closer. I know what you're going to say now.
It's closer today. You're closer to 2050 than you are to 1990.
Wow, that's horrible. And you know, at 2026, which is, it sounds like a long time away, but by 2026, you're closer to 2050 than you were to 2000. So, I know. Listen, we don't last forever. And in some ways, it's a good thing. Like, this insanity can end at some point. But it's amazing to just watch the march of time. You know, I thought about it this morning. Waking up, and I'm like, wow, another burning platform. It feels like just yesterday we were doing the previous weeks. And here we are. It's like this quick. Anyway, Mbulelo is going to join us in a minute, but what has happened to him is something that happened to me the other day. Your laptop just decides on its own that it's going to download some update. And you switch it on. And this has happened to me in meetings before or where I really needed it. And then the thing, you know, it's got the update thing going on, and it says, well, you know, this should be done in 5 minutes or whatever, but laptops lie. And then you end up waiting and waiting and waiting.
Well, I have a friend who's one of his favorite things to say about technology is that technology is not like witchcraft. It just works.
But it always, these updates, you know, you're like, come on, must you do this now, Steve Jobs? Must this happen now while I'm getting ready for a presentation? You have to wait 10 minutes.
Listen here, it's just working. It's doing its job.
I know.
Going about its job.
No. Wouldn't it be funny if human beings updated like that? If humans just suddenly, they went like a bit blank on their face and they just, I think he's doing an update. You're like, you just watch someone freeze and they don't know what to do. And
that would be awesome because it would mean that at the end of that, some of those glitches that really irritate you about that person might have been bug fixes.
Right.
You know, those bugs would have been.
Well, Michael says something interesting here. I don't know that this is true because he says you never download updates on laptops. It's never necessary. That's not true. I mean, some of the operating system stuff, you know, like when Apple do an update to their whole operating system, it absolutely is necessary.
I love that. Yeah. I love Michael. I love Michael's kind of just putting it out there matter-of-factly.
Yeah, like, and he's just saying that's never necessary. Sorry. And I'll be like, okay. And you know who I love even more is the people who just believe someone like Michael when they say something like that. Okay, I'll never download an update again. Sure. Oh, my God.
That's why it happens automatically. Doesn't need your permission.
No. Eddie Murphy's Delirious is 38 years old today. Yo. That's unbelievable. Feels like just yesterday we were watching that. Hey, Mbulelo's laptop's finished updating. How's it?
I'm back. Yeah.
Except Mbulelo's a little bit out of focus. Your laptop has made you a little soft.
Yeah, it's
no. That's growing up in the northern suburbs.
It's not an update. It's a down date. That's what it is. Imagine if you decide that your laptop didn't want to upload things, but it wanted to go backwards. You know, you're a conservative, one of those old school conservatives. I watched the most depressing little YouTube video. It's probably only about 15 minutes long. And I might just post the link for everybody to go and check it out. But it is probably...
Just to share the depression.
Well, it was about South Africans who've moved to New Zealand. And someone sent it to me because they couldn't believe how depressing it was. Now, look, again, I'm going to say, you know, if you've moved somewhere and you're happy with that move, awesome. I'm with you 100%. This was easily the most dreary, miserable thing ever. There's this woman who, she used to be in like middle management here in South Africa, and she moved to New Zealand. Now she's a bus driver. There's a guy, and he used to be an author for Die Vrye Weekblad, and he used to be a journalist. And he was quite successful over here, and now he's fixing shoes. It's like...
But why did they move?
Well, this is it, right? And then there's this one guy who, you know, he talks about how New Zealand is so different to South Africa, and it's a short... It's actually produced for New Zealand television. So I'm not sure what the gist was. I mean, there are neighborhoods in New Zealand.
The intention.
Yeah, there are a whole lot of neighborhoods there which are you know, almost completely South African. And it turns out the South Africans kind of stick together in New Zealand, which is, yeah, I know, you pull that face, but you're exactly right. Like, that's the feel I had coming away from it. Again, I want to be clear about this because people tend to hear one thing and then they assume a whole lot of other things. I don't have any problem with anybody moving anywhere. You can go anywhere you like. I've got friends who are, in fact, most of the people I went to university with are living in other countries, okay? And a lot of them, I'd really? Say probably, I'd probably 70% of them are very happy. I've got one friend who runs an ad agency in London, and he's extremely happy and successful with his wife. Another friend of mine is a lawyer in Vancouver. He's very happy with his wife. Another friend of mine just became an American citizen in Dallas, Texas. And he and his wife are extremely happy. And those three are examples to me of successful migrations. And you should be able to go anywhere in the world that you want to go. You know, if you want to move to Beijing, go to Beijing. I also know lots of people who've moved to other places and they're very unhappy. But I would say in my friendship group, the close friends I have that have moved, the majority of them are very happy. Watching this documentary, though, I just thought... Devil, take the wheel, because there's no way. Maybe it's just a New Zealand thing, and maybe because New Zealand is so antithetical to everything I care about. You know, maybe for some people New Zealand's great. And again, I've got one friend who lives there, and he seems happy. He seems like he's having a good time. He and his wife, and, you know, they've got three kids. And, yeah, sure. Sure, I'm sure that it's great, but...
But I'm sure he doesn't live in the neighborhood full of other South Africans.
No, I mean, what's the point of moving out into the world if you're going to keep the same friends and you're going to still wear a safari puck and you're going to, you know, look for other South Africans to engage with the whole time? And it, just to me, it's...
Do you think they have shops there? Do you think they have like a corner shop that sells Jungle Oats and Milo and Oros?
This is what two of the people who they interview do, is they own and run the South African... No, really, they run the South African shop. And the place is filled, it's filled with like leopard print and Mrs. Ball's chutney. And I get it, all right, I get it. You're hankering for home. But apparently, here's the scariest part. The divorce rate for... families from South Africa who emigrated to New Zealand, not for all other countries, but to New Zealand. That's why I mentioned all the marriages and all that group of friends of mine earlier, is that the divorce rate in New Zealand for South Africans who've emigrated there is 70%, 70. So it obviously puts a huge strain on the relationship. And, hey, listen.
Well, there are many factors that make that strain. I mean, I'm looking at Aurelia here saying her uncle was a lecturer at UJ. 9 months to find it. So what I ask myself is, when you decide to move to another country, surely you do some research and you plan ahead.
Yeah.
And you don't just move there
without
like a plan.
Right.
Or not? Clearly not, because here you are, 9 months later, and I'm just like...
His wife was a physiotherapist here and became a glorified masseuse there, and she says, oh yeah, and the wife and him barely speak. Whew! Whew! Oh
yeah, yeah. Yeah, that's... That's a tricky one. Hey, on the moving thing, nobody sticks together like the Germans. So wherever they go globally, they're very, very unique. I mean, even in South Africa, hey, you go to like Hermanus, you might as well, you literally might as well be in Stuttgart.
And they have Deutsche Schule.
What they do is they open their own shops. Go ahead.
No, well, they've got a whole community that's, for me, you were in that community in South Africa to some degree. You know, you went to Deutsche Schule.
Yeah, but I mean, I had people in our classes. They were all over the place. Maybe Joburg is different.
Right.
Maybe Joburg is different because Joburg is like that, right? It's got a small Portuguese community over there. It's got a, you know, all of those kinds of things. But
I meant globally. So when I lived in London, the Germans do they don't like come and integrate. They do their thing. We live here. We buy our bread here. We do our thing wherever we go.
That sort of sounds like this documentary. Well, it is natural, you know, like birds of a feather, that's fine. But I think if you're going to leave your country of origin and go somewhere else, it's almost incumbent on you to make a bit of an effort to assimilate. Like if I had to move somewhere, you can't keep supporting the blow biller if you go to, you know, Seattle, Washington. Like you have to at some point start supporting the country that's now supporting you. You know what I mean? Here's the other thing.
Except the Bulls.
Well, I just want
the Bulls are the biggest franchise, isn't it?
They're the most successful, huh?
I just want to throw this in as a final thought, because watching this documentary was just, I felt so hollow afterwards. The worst part of it is, apparently New Zealanders consider South Africans arrogant. Now, just take a minute. How often on this show have we spoken about that Calvinist influence in South Africa? And among white Afrikaners and among black people, there's this feeling that humility is something really virtuous all on its own, right? And that's why so many South Africans call Nigerians and Americans arrogant, because we have a bit of an inferiority complex. You know what I'm talking about. Now imagine how big the inferiority complex, or how boring the people of a country that call us arrogant. To me, that's just mind-boggling. Imagine New Zealand is walking around going, oh no, here comes that arrogant South African. And meanwhile, it's like Stoffel, who used to live in, you know,
but maybe that's also indicative of what happens when you come into it. Because some of that arrogance is a response factor. It's like a protective mechanism, right? So now you've lost your status in society. One of the things that you then kind of compensate with is probably a level of kind of aloofness.
That makes sense.
Now I have to see it. Now I have to see.
All right, I'll tell you what. Yeah. I'll have them post the link at the end of the show, because if you watch it now, you're not going to listen to us. There's no point in watching it now. But I'll send you the link. It's unbelievable to see.
But with this generation, like where we are as South Africa, we have to be brutal enough to say why most people moved. Right now, it is mostly white people, and we know they moved more for the gafar than actually, I want to go to New Zealand, I want to go to Australia. It was just, oh no, well, the melanin people are here, largely, not all.
No, you are
not
right.
All, not I all. Mean, So the mindset already is moving.
The
melanin people are here. Mm-hmm. And not all, but so, you know, when you're moving, not because of the real reasons on the ground, but rather anywhere but here, that's always a bad decision. It's like, oh, why are you breaking up with your wife?
Mm.
Oh, the other one's better looking. The other one's more solid, reliable, trustworthy.
Yeah.
It's, you know what I mean?
So if any motivation to do something that is based on negatives is usually a bad decision. But I will say this, is like they quickly went round the room in this group of South African women who were, like, they get together in some kind of club and sing songs or whatever. And they went round the group and in this crowd. Listen, it's pretty sad, because every single one of them had moved because of crime, because they'd had someone murdered in their family or whatever. So that's an understandable impulse. I get that completely. Like when, you know, if someone broke into your house and tried to kill you, you wouldn't want to live in that house anymore. That is often, you know, the motivation. So that notwithstanding, because I'm not going to mock those people, I think they've had they've had to make some very grueling and tough decisions, and I totally understand that. But there are a huge proportion of people who leave a place for negative reasons. And in this case, in South Africa, there was absolutely, without a doubt, some of it was like, let's get away from the blacks. And some of it was blatant, like, oh, we've lost our country. It's time to get out, you know, kind of thing. It's this almost the surrender mentality, which I, again, you know, if that's the reason that you do something, that's up to you. That's your business. I'm not going to criticize you, but that would never be a reason for me to do something. If you're not moving for positive reasons, you're going to have a very tough time. That's all I can say. And they actually addressed this because the one guy said he bumped into three South Africans who were complaining about the Maoris, and he said to them, guys, and he said, guys, this is, you're taking your poison from South Africa and you're putting it in here. And I thought, oof, that's not going to go well for those chaps. It's just not going to be a fun time.
There's so many things happening in this statement. Yeah. Like, right. I'm going to leave where I come from, and then I'm going to get you, and then I'm going to tell you everything that's wrong with what you're doing over here.
Exactly. Yeah, right.
So can I tell you an equally, I mean, I have to use a word that South Africans don't like in the story. I was on a train in Italy, and these two guys are speaking Afrikaans. Mm. So obviously they don't know. I can understand. I could be Mario Balotelli's cousin, you know?
Right.
So I can see the guys looking at me. You know, obviously I'm the only black guy on the train. And now I can hear where the conversation's going. Mm-hmm. So the guy says, Vatsuk.
Oh my God.
Right? But I don't say anything. Because I'm not the, like I've told you before, racism, for me, I've been taught not to respond to
it. But did you even react? So, like, could they see? Not okay. So they don't know anything. They're just going to carry on. No, you want to hear where this goes.
Yeah. Because I could hear already the tone the whole time. And I thought, oh, this must be such a sad life. Like, you're in Italy now. Look how you live. And you still, it's like South Africa's on your mind. You know what I mean? Like, if you get divorced, enjoy the new wife, chief. Like, I didn't even understand. And even at a young age, and I have a really, really bad temper. If I lose it, I lose it, right? Mm-hmm. It's like, even then, I felt sad for them. Instead of getting angry, I was like, that is so sad. I'm so sad for you.
Like, did you say that to them in Afrikaans? Like,
No. Well, if there's one
that's
thing
what
I don't
need,
is racism. Like,
forget, but who cares what they need? You know, it's not your job to help other people along the way. And I feel like Bulela's hit on something really important here. You know, there's so many people who have backward ideas in this world. And actually, I'm not going to correct them. It's not my business. You go ahead and be stupid. It's like, for example, you go ahead and you argue with your wife every day instead of trying to make a happy marriage. You argue with your friends every day and end up with none. If you want to make bad decisions, you know, you play stupid games, you get stupid prizes. That's kind of how I feel about it. And like your reaction must have been hard to contain, because you don't hear a lot of that blatant stuff much anymore. You know, people are much more, they're much more indirect about their prejudices and general bigotry these days, because it has become a lot more, and thank God, socially unacceptable for people to voice downright outrageous bigotry. And, you know, you don't hear a lot of it. You don't. In the old days, I remember there were people who would use that word around me all the time. As a kid, for example, I would hear that word and I'd think, this is just how people talk. Honestly, you don't hear it anymore. I haven't heard it for a long time. And
it's interesting you say that. It happened to me. I mean, this is not the diaries of MKT, but
no, sure.
I was walking in Cape Town. Yeah, I was walking. So I was living in Cape Town, obviously, 3 years ago before I joined Cliff Central. And I was walking. My mentor, and this isn't like in a shoddy part of town. My mentor lives in Bishop's Court, which is, that's where you want to live.
Jesus.
And I was walking there. That's where you want to live. And see these two kids roll down the window, say same word. What are you doing here? Scream it out the window and drive off.
But, kids.
3 years ago.
No, I wouldn't say kids, but like old enough to be driving a yuppie SUV in the burbs. Like, hey you, you know, what are you doing here? So it's, I mean, like you say, it's rare, but
it's rare.
But my, what I really wanted to say about now is, I think what's awesome now, now you're starting to see probably more with people leaving for an enlightened self-interest across the color spectrum. It's like, okay, I'm a CA. I want to go and work in Singapore. I want to go and work in, you know, in Luxembourg. I want to go work in London. They're moving for those reasons rather than I want to get away from religion or race. And that's awesome. We should celebrate we're producing people in South Africa that the global market is willing to absorb. And that's an awesome thing.
That's a good thing. And you know what? People must always go to chase the best possible opportunities for them and their families. And here's Bruce saying, for example, he's read that there are more blacks than whites leaving South Africa. It would be good to have the facts. Well, that is actually true. In fact, it was Stats SA that published the survey about 2 or 3 years ago. So before all of our current maladies and the coronavirus and lockdowns, a lot of black professionals have left South Africa. I'm sure that among the three of us, we can name a couple of black emigrants from South Africa.
Which is indicative, you know. So, Bulelo, you're right that we should celebrate the fact that we do have world-class professionals and sports people and actors and all of those things. Mm-hmm. But what it also indicates is that we don't have opportunities for them here. We don't have equal opportunities for them here. And that's even sadder. Mm. That, for me, is really sad. To say that we lose all these brains to the rest of the world, which we could, you know, we could use here. We need them too, in order to, and it's, you know, it's a bit of a chicken and egg situation. We need them so that we can be competitive with the rest of the world. There's, you know. What else is there?
I don't want to turn this morning into like a New Zealand bashing, but I saw that Jacinda Ardern, who is the Prime Minister of New Zealand, has shut down the entire country over one case of coronavirus. One
unbelievable
case this week. And Australia is in complete lockdown. I want to play you a clip. This is unbelievable. So I'm just going to play you the sound. I don't know if Pumi and Bulelo are going to be able to hear this, but it's worth you listening to. If you're listening to us on the podcast and you're watching us live on YouTube, let me just, I hope this works, but here is the, what's his name? The Premier of New South Wales in Australia. And this is what he has to say, all right? This is his message to the people of New South Wales.
There will be no removal of masks to consume alcohol outdoors. So you will no longer be able to remove your mask to drink a cocktail at a pop-up beer garden on a footpath as part of a pub crawl.
This is, and he says it with such an arrogance, he's like, you can't, there will be no removal of masks to drink a cocktail in a park on a footpath. There will be none of that. Like a parent, like, shitting on their child. I mentioned this yesterday. You listen to it, it's just so condescending. It's unbelievable. And the people of the great nation of Australia are just rolling over and letting people like that, this little nerd with glasses on, this turd, this hot poo of a human being, they're letting him talk to them like that. It's outrageous. Like, we wouldn't tolerate that here. Maybe we are arrogant. Maybe we're just confident.
No.
If Cyril says that to us, from March last year, did any of us go, oh, yes, sir, three bags full, Cyril, we'll do exactly what you told us. In fact, I don't think the three of us and everybody who listens to us, I don't think any of us have followed any of those rules.
The immediate response of South Africans was, I already know a guy that I'm going to get straight. I can get a case for you. It's double the price, but don't worry about it. But I'll hook you up at the corner immediately.
Yeah.
But it's because, you know, in those...
We don't like the rules. We don't follow the rules.
They're so supine.
Yeah.
You know, like, people in that part of the world, yes, there's no potholes. Yes, they, you know, yes, they stop at the traffic light before they walk. But, like, they are so supine. The Canadians...
Supine.
Like,
good word.
Oh.
So just quickly, a minor correction from Duds. He says that's Dictator Dan from Victoria. It's not New South Wales. So Dictator Dan... who is, okay. I mean, really, like, this guy, how the hell he thinks he's going to ever get... Mind you, he may be re-elected. Because a lot of people really prefer having safety, in inverted commas, because it's not really safety, but safety over everything else. They prefer that to being self-reliant. And they would rather have you know, be told what to do, basically, and feel this illusion of security dictated.
So the guy I work with has been reading Dr. Frankl.
Oh, yeah.
Viktor Frankl.
Awesome.
Kind of experiences coming out of the camp and, you know, the psychology of it all. And one of the things that I find very fascinating is he talks about the psychology of a group and that most people want to be in the center. You know, you don't want to be in the front because you get the whippings, the lashings, right. And you don't want to be at the back because you also get whipped and lashed. Mm-hmm. So if you can just be safe in the middle there, kind of going with the flow, and then still have the buffer of people around you kind of taking most of the hits. That's what it's about. You know, that's what the safety is about. It's kind of like, just keep me here in this warm and fuzzy place. Don't. And so that's why most people kind of are relatively compliant, you know, of the flow. What are most people doing? Okay, I'm going to do that too.
Afraid so. Here's Dictator Dan, if you're wondering what he looks like and you didn't get to hear the clip. There he is. This is the guy who's telling people in Victoria State, that's where Melbourne is, what to do. And they're all listening to him. Unbelievable. So, all right. I know it sounds like we're having a go at the Antipodes today, but that's, I promise that's not the purpose of this morning's conversation. We've got a lot of other good things to talk about. And one of those things is Afghanistan, which I know we've been discussing. Here's a cute little video of George W. Bush suddenly realizing that Obama and Trump are getting the blame for what's going on in Afghanistan, even though he started it. So take a look at this quickly. And it says on the screen, when you started a 20-year war and people are arguing whether to blame Biden or Trump, and he's just nodding his head going, yeah. It's hilarious. So that's George W., who we haven't heard from in a long time. I wonder if he said anything now whether it would go down particularly well. Biden addressed the people the other day, and it didn't go down well on the left, the right, or the center. People are not impressed with what's happening there. We'll speak to Brooke Spector, by the way, a little later on about that, among other things. Yes, Poms?
Well, just because I knew we were going to talk about Afghanistan, just kind of refreshing my memory and preparing for today's show, I came across that wonderful little video of George W. with the bullhorn at Ground Zero.
Yes.
The world will hear from Hashem.
Yeah.
20 years later.
Yeah, that was quite powerful. Remember, he'd just become president. I mean, he'd been president for a year when all of that happened.
Yeah.
And that was one moment in that presidency that I remember thinking, actually, there may just be a bit of leadership in this guy. He might not just be his daddy's son who's, you know. And I thought, it is moments like that when the whole nation is so focused that you do see leadership, not this watery rubbish we've seen from our president, where, you know, we've got riots and looting, and like a few days later he comes out of the dark and says, well, we're going to try and take control, blah, blah, blah. You know, be strong. Stand for something. Anyway, we'll get to that later on in the Burning Platform. I don't want to take up all the time now. A couple of headlines that you need to know about this morning. You want to hear?
I love the first one. Love the first one.
All right, so let's do the first one. Carl Niehaus. Pumi's onto my headlines here faster than I am. Carl Niehaus has said, I will continue protesting for the release of Jacob Zuma. There's a nice picture of him with his legal team and those he referred to as his comrades outside the escort magistrate's court. So he is going to continue protesting. He was arrested last month, of course, after participating in an illegal demonstration outside the escort correctional services facility where Zuma is serving 15 months. The staunch Zuma supporter appeared in the escort magistrate's court on Wednesday for allegedly breaching COVID-19 regulations, but the matter was postponed to November. Niehaus was taken into police custody after allegedly convening a group of people despite the regulations. So,
dude,
this guy, he's just unbelievable, right? He says it's all trumped up. He says that this is absolute nonsense. There are people who were not arrested. Jacob Zuma is being used as a scapegoat, blah, blah, blah. What do you think of this, Pums? I mean, you've been watching this story, too. He's a nutcase.
No, I want to tell you what I think of this, but I just remembered that, like, the last time I was on the show, I wanted to tell you about bumping into Carl Niehaus in Rosebank.
What happened?
And it was a shame, man. You know, there's that very, they love using that photo of him in his, like, military gear.
Yes.
Surrounded by barbed wire. I think he was in Bloemfontein, like outside the Bloemfontein court. You know that, you yes, know the picture I'm talking
yes,
about, right?
Correct, yeah.
Where he's, like, standing there with his backpack and he's looking down and he's just all alone. And it's so sad to
yes.
see Carl Niehaus kind of clinging onto his ideals. Oh, man. I saw him in Rosebank, and I actually saw that picture in real life, because
oh,
he's all by himself with his hands in his pockets, no. just like walking, looking down. I felt so sad for him, because I think we all laugh at him now, right? When we see him on the news, when we hear him, I am Umsholozi.
Shame.
Umsholozi is us. And but when you see him, so sad, guys. So sad.
I think I've said this before. I don't know if I've said it to you too. There is no one blacker in South Africa than a white guy that only dates black chicks and hangs out with black people. And everyone knows who I'm talking about. When a white guy's into the black lifestyle, there's no one more black on this planet. So Carl Niehaus is that guy. I bet you he only listens to 90s hip hop. And yeah, well, he even speaks better
I think
Zulu
he only listens to 90s Kwaito. I think
Kwaito,
he listens
yeah.
to Kwaito.
And Maskandi music. He's that kind. You know, he's probably. I interviewed him on my TV show this year, and it was one of the saddest things when he walked in and when he walked out. He really has nobody.
It is.
He has nobody. His daughter. He was telling me she gets bullied at school because of who her dad is. And
dude, he lied about his mother being dead so that he could collect money.
That's
I'm
right.
just like
yeah, I don't
everything
have,
about this
I don't
guy.
Have sympathy, but he is a sad person. And I got the distinct impression at the end of that interview that that was the only thing he had to do that day. That's a bit sad.
Sure.
You know.
That's why he has to, and this is what I love about this country, right? Like, Carl Niehaus. Carl Niehaus can protest, he gets listened to, people like shove mics in his face. It's just,
well,
you know,
it's almost because we're all in on the joke. We put microphones and cameras in front of Carl Niehaus because we're kind of taking pleasure in his pain. Really, it's a bit of Schadenfreude, I think.
Oh, but seeing him walking down the path, I think he was like near Starbucks or something.
Shame.
I was just like, shame.
Did you say,
Did you say
hello?
He's going to go drink rubbish coffee.
Did you
his
say?
Whole life sucks. He's going to go drink rubbish coffee at Starbucks and his life, and he's alone. Ugh.
Did you say hello?
No.
Ah.
It's like when you're the conductor, you don't look at the trombone section because it encourages them.
No.
If I said hi, he would have wanted to say stuff. No, you must just like, you must also, you look down and quickly walk past. What? Yeah, you don't encourage rubbish. Ah.
We're going to have to talk about this later on in the Burning Platform as well. And I mentioned Brooks Spector. We'll have Brooks and we'll have Ivo Fechter both on with Pumi and I later on to discuss a whole bunch of things, mostly Afghanistan, what's going on in U.S. politics. Brooks is a great guy to talk to on that front. But we'll also talk about this story from Fin24. I don't know if you saw it yesterday. And I'm just going to refer to it now and we'll get into it later on. But the the government here in South Africa has a plan. They want South Africans to pay 12% of their earnings into a state-managed fund. This is over and above all of our taxes. Doesn't that sound like a great plan? I mean, really, if you think that the government that has mismanaged every cent that you've given them so far needs just to have more of your money, then obviously you'll be in favor of this. That's about, what, 3 or 4 people in the whole country. But let's see how it goes. Those 3 or 4 people coincidentally happen to be in the government. But, yeah, Pumi's just going, great plan, bro. You know, that's going to work very well.
Although, as a South African, no problem. I'm open to it. But I have a few conditions.
Yes.
I have a few conditions.
Yeah.
Right? The one of them is, tell you what, if you can give me electricity for the next 10 years,
mm-hmm.
right, in a row, in a row.
Yep.
So you don't get a day off.
Uninterrupted.
Just give me electricity 10 years in a row, uninterrupted, so that, you know, I can do whatever I like. You can have 12% of my money. But 10 years in a row, that's on you, pal. Maybe let's just start with that. That's it. That's all I ask. Is that unreasonable?
Well, we've already given them 40% of our money or a fraction of that to do it, and they couldn't do it with 40%. What makes you think an extra 12 is going to make all the difference?
Well, I'm trying to live in the spirit of openness, believe in the new. Sure. All I'm asking for is 10 years of electricity, and then we can talk about the 12% thing. So...
Yes, guys, math, just arithmetic is an important skill to have.
Yeah.
This 12%, ne, is it 12% over and above the almost 40% we pay in taxes? I'm just
that's the
arithmetic.
Plan.
I'm not looking for
lots of, you know.
So is it 40? Plus 12,
that's it.
Or is it 12 of the 40?
No,
right?
No. That 40 is gone. Been stolen already. Sorry, this is an additional 12.
And I'm just like,
plus.
I don't know, you know, 40 plus 12, guys. It's a big chunk of, you know, it's a big chunk of joke.
You know what the problem is now? We can go to Sweden where they pay 60%, and I can see the lack of potholes. So now, so I'm paying those taxes. That's almost like you pay the money and you get to date me instead of Idris Elba. You get this package instead of the Idris Elba package for the same price. Nah, that ain't going to fly. That ain't going to work.
That's right.
That ain't going to work.
It's a shitty deal. Mm-mm. It's like when you buy those Chinese products. You know you're getting a cheap deal, but then the thing breaks after a week's use. And meanwhile, someone else paid the same amount of money, and they got a good product. Anyway, listen, we've got to move on to some other headlines. There's this horrible story. I don't know if you saw this. I say it's a horrible story because I didn't even know about it until now. But the Gauteng Department of Education says they've identified 6 culprits who committed the arson attack on a school hall in Glen Vista on Monday. Now, we've often joked about how rough the South is. And in fact, this is Leanne's old school, I think. The school hall in Glen Vista was torched by some pupils who expressed they were not willing to sit for an examination.
Do you know what the best part of that is? Do you know what the best part of that whole story is?
What?
So Monday they torched the school hall, and on Tuesday they just set up desks outside in the field, and they had to write their exam in the sun.
I don't know if there's any good story here, because...
I think that's a good comeuppance, right? Because now, like... The school hall's gone. Okay, you're writing your exam in the sun.
Yeah, in other words,
versus the school hall's gone. We're going to postpone the exam and see where else we can put you.
Yeah, just do it in the sun. Is that what they did? Because I've only
that's what they did.
All right, I've only got the story here about the actual.
There were videos on social media. There were videos on social media of the flames in the school hall.
I see.
And like, you know, the curtains on the stage, you know, those, like,
yes,
that's what they set alight. So I don't know if the rest of the building kind of,
what a bunch of idiots,
eventually but there were videos on social media of those curtains, and somebody with a fire.
Oh my God, that's insane.
Well, they actually should have followed instructions. Our former president has told us how you put out a fire is you actually need a fire pool outside. And what you can do is we were told that you line up with buckets to put out a fire. That's why you'd have a fire pool. So that school should maybe have had a fire pool outside of the hall. I don't know if you remember that. I'm sure Lord
good, good advice. Good advice, Mbulelo.
They actually had a fire extinguisher, thank goodness.
Here's the school sitting outside writing the exam. Look at
that. Wow.
Dummies.
Do you know how bright a piece of paper is in the sun?
They're going to do worse than they even thought.
That is awesome.
Yeah, I like
that. That is awesome, right? That is awesome.
It's of like course, you need leadership in that time. Of course, you need leadership. This is not tolerated.
Here's the problem. There are probably some of those kids who are sitting outside like that who didn't do anything wrong. right? And now they're also being punished. It's just not right. That's not fair.
Except you've been in high school, Gareth, and you know how things are in high school.
Everyone gets punished.
Like, that plan was hatched, and enough people knew. They could have told somebody, and they could have, like, prevented it. And they were just like, let's see if this goes off, and then maybe we won't have to write anyway. Ha ha.
And also, it's important in teams, right? Because in every good sports team I've ever been in, is that the locker room must control itself. So now what it's got to do, it sets a tone in amongst. It's why the military, the proper military, is they remove your identity. Is that actually we must learn that you don't matter. The needs of the many in a school outweigh those three or four. If you didn't know, why didn't you know? And why aren't you taking control? Because that's how success comes, right?
Right.
Is you've got to get everyone on the same page. So this is leadership from whoever the headmaster or the headmistress is. I love it. I'm on board. This will not be tolerated.
I also thought this is like fantastic.
Right. I love
fantastic.
It.
Fantastic.
All right.
Right in the sun.
And, yeah. Oh, imagine this happened in Australia. Oh my God, making the children sit outside with no sunscreen and no government regulated. Oh. But South Africans, get outside, man. Plus, you must also mow that lawn.
Look, what I love about it is also something else that we kind of don't see so much anymore, is the parents kind of went, they must sit for the exam. They must sit there in the sun for the exam. There are no parents out there, like, protesting, my child's not going to be sitting in the sun. You must make a plan for them to write somewhere else. You don't know none of that. Everybody was just like, they're going to sit in the sun.
Right. In the army, Good Cop says, if one person made a mistake, everybody got an oppie. So that everyone got into the same trouble. Yeah, I like that. Okay.
What's an oppie?
This story shows how the example is the teacher of all children. That's exactly right from Michael. Yeah, spot on. All right. So one or two quick things I want to tell you about. We've got the Burning Platform coming up a little bit later on, which is always good, and this morning it should be fiery one. We've got Brooke Spector, we've got Ivo Fechter, and we'll talk about some of the international and local stories that everyone's talking about at the moment, and hopefully give you some insight and analysis with our guests. But I also want to tell you about something that I did the other day. I went to visit one of our clients, Tom's Art. I've told you about them before. Do you know what gilding is, Pumi and Bulelo? You know what gilding is?
It's like gilding a lily?
Correct. Yeah. It's where you take gold leaf or silver leaf. It's an actual thin layer of the stuff. I mean, it's really an unbelievable thinness of sub. And you pop it on furniture, and then you brush it in gently with something called a fixer, and you gild your. You know all those chairs that you see in, I don't know, Windsor Castle or Buckingham Palace.
Versailles,
exactly. On the doors, they gild the kind of detailed work on the doors, the moldings. And, it's incredible.
And the frames of all the portraits.
Absolutely. That's exactly what gilding is. So they take thin gold or silver leaves by hand and they apply them to the furniture. And it transforms it, obviously, into something completely different. It takes boring old wood and makes it look incredible. And it works. It stays, because it's actual metal, it stays looking good for a very long time. It's incredible how they do this. And you're going to find some of that at Tom's Art. I popped in there the other day, and they really do have an incredible range of pretty amazing stuff. You need to go and see it. They've got classical art, furniture, accessories, and some really good deals. If you're in Joburg, you can make sure you go to their Cromerville showroom. They're at 15 Dartfield Road. And they're there from weekdays from 8 a.m. to 5 p.m. and Saturday mornings from 9 to 1. That's Tom's Art. They're at 15 Dartfield, Dartfield Road in Cromerville. Make sure you let them know that Cliff Central sent you. And please report back. We want to know what you got, if you got anything from them. So that's 15 Dartfield Road. It's called Tom's Art, T-O-M's Art. Very, very easy. Go and check them out. And you can say that we sent you if you want to get a good deal. All right. Very nice.
Awesome.
All right. So, Pums, we missed you last week. What are we going to catch up on in your life? There must be some things going on. You've been really busy.
Dude, I'm just a mom. I'm just a simple mom living my life.
Nonsense.
Here in Joburg.
You're it's a businesswoman. Nothing, you're a mom.
Nothing out of the sorts. Nothing like, did you see this? Because I had hoped it would be one of your stories. Did you see the story? Australia again.
Oh, yeah. We're really going up
with
there.
With the woman, a woman who was like shopping in the spice aisle.
Yeah.
And there's like a python, a 10-foot python.
That's like my worst fear. I don't know what I would do.
Yeah.
I saw this one video of, I don't know where it was. I think it was somewhere in Indonesia or Thailand or somewhere like that. And there were these huge monitor lizards crawling around on the shelves.
And Imagine that.
I even played the video on the show the one morning. Now, I hate those things more than any. If you want to talk about me, I become properly afraid. Like I get, you know how some people scream and shout and jump on furniture when they see a spider? That's what makes me do it. Oh, my God. So that's not my favorite thing. It's really the most terrible.
Dude.
Ugh. Awful.
Turns out, though,
don't go to Bali.
The snake is not venomous, and they caught it and released it into the woodlands. But I'm just like, imagine, like, I'm just going to go for this can of beans over here.
Yeah, and then there's
baked a snake.
Huge python comes out of there. No, thank you. That's not a great idea. I would be traumatized for a very long time. In fact, I'm rocking back and forth now, just trying to soothe myself back into listening to this. Not good. Jeez.
That's awesome.
Bulelo was listening to Sean Sanders yesterday talking about Bitcoin and all the rest, and you came to some realization that you love being alive at a time where you've got things like social media, Bitcoin. You know, you can hit the internet now, and this is something I've spoken about a number of times on the show. You can find out about anything. I mean, I was joking yesterday with Simpiwe because she laughed at me, and she didn't think very highly of me not being able to use the swipe up link on Instagram, and I figured that out, and I did it thanks to the internet. You know, I went on, and it gives you step-by-step instructions. My favorite thing is to watch these videos where people do crafts on, like you can either get it on Facebook or you go straight to YouTube or on Instagram, but these people who make these amazing epoxy tables, or they turn wood, or they fix broken stuff, they teach you how to solder or how to weld. Or, you know, there's just incredibly talented people doing this stuff. And for me, the internet represents a huge resource for learning. Forget about the other stuff, social media and all that crap, because I think that has a good and a bad side. But there's never been as much information out there as there is now. Never. There's no excuse. There's no excuse anymore. If you are ignorant in 2021, you're ignorant willfully.
I totally agree. Yeah. Especially if you have a personality type like I have. Like, I'm more of an autodidact. Like, I don't like to go and ask somebody what's going on, you know? Like, I don't like the, oh, okay, I'll get back to you thing. Don't worry about it. Let me, in fact, if I can eliminate the people, I want to get straight to the knowledge is what I really like, which is why university was a bit of a thing for me besides the 15 beers a day, you know, where I failed the whole thing. But, like, I don't really like
Bulelo.
Go ahead. Yeah.
Wonderful. Autodidactic, in a sentence,
yeah.
Just like that. And I think that in itself requires a moment.
I like it.
I actually Googled that word before here, so I don't want people thinking I'm smart. I Googled it. It's my Google word of the day, and I nailed it.
Didactically.
All right. So you, what do you go onto the internet to find out about besides the word autodidact? What do you use? Like, seriously, let's give examples. I just mentioned how I like watching these videos of people who make things or people who explain things. And that was never available before. You had to look it up in a book, and usually you didn't have that book lying around at home, so you'd have to go to a library or you'd have to ask someone. We didn't have the internet. And now, you know, there's just really no excuse. If you want to know about anything you can, we spoke about gilding just a second ago. You can see videos of people teach you how to do that.
It's like an elaborate like screensaver. You know how screensavers would like get you, and then you just zoned watching that thing kind of morph into lots of that's what all these videos are like, right? So you get caught up. You look at the first one and you're just like, how to like make up like smoky eyes.
Mm-hmm.
And then it just gets weirder and weirder. You eventually are watching like video after video of like some Chinese person transforming themselves into a black girl with makeup.
Yes, yeah. It's phenomenal.
It's amazing. I love the internet.
So listen,
for me...
Go ahead. No, I want to hear what you watch.
No, like... I like to know how things work. Like I don't like when people tell me how things work. I really like to know, how is it possible for a giraffe to have a heart that functions? Like, that kind of thing interests me. How is that happening while I'm alive and I also have a heart? But that's insane to power a machine like that. So I love that I can really, without people, without influence, without feeling, I can take my ego out of it. I kind of like that side of it, you know? I love that. It's like, I love to know how computers work. How does a TV work? How are TVs so thin now, yet the technology is getting better? That's not because the Korean people that are magnificent in design, Samsung, feel like they should. It's like there are people doing incredible things that are possible for human beings. Even if you're from Limpopo, you could do this.
You can.
If you just have that knowledge.
Right.
I love that.
And the funny thing, like you mentioned, TVs is a great example of technology. Like, TVs have not only become thinner, better, clearer, more definition, more enabled to like just directly stream from the internet or anything else. We've got all these amazing services that you can now get on TV as well. But it's actually also become cheaper. Like, a TV now, a really high quality TV now, is way, way cheaper than what they were, the same amount of technology or the same amount of clarity that you would have got 5 years ago. It's half the price. It's like the inverse. The technology curve goes this way and the price curve goes the opposite way. So that's really cool. But here are some things that other people are mentioning. So Derek says he likes watching videos of blacksmiths. There's a guy called Alex Steele.
Wow.
Now, those, you know, that's a talent, that's a skill that, if we didn't have it on YouTube, would probably die out. There are not that many blacksmiths in the world.
Yeah.
Dud says we have misinformation, disinformation exploding everywhere. I'm left with not believing very much these days. That's also true. Beth says if you want to convert pounds to kilograms, thank you, Google. You know, how did we do that? How did we do that before? We used to have these discs that you would turn. You'd have the amount on the inside, and then it would give you the pound amount on the outside or whatever. It was a piece of hardware you had to use. Or you'd have to know the formula in your head and actually sit down and write down how many pounds to a kilogram. Ah, and then we multiply that.
Oh, if you have a really fancy scale, it's got both.
Correct. But I mean, who had those in those days?
You've just, Beth's just opened Pandora's box there. Dear Americans, if the point of measurement is to get accuracy, why the hell are we still using the imperial system? It doesn't make sense. Well, the metric system goes right down to the zero. Let's move on. What are these clowns doing? But thanks for Google, by the way.
Terrific. There's this terrific map of the world, and they show countries that use the metric system, and then they show the one country that uses the imperial system. It's amazing. Robert says he loves watching those How It's Made videos.
Yeah.
That's also good. Good Stuff says, I like watching art restoration, Baumgartner on YouTube. He even did gilding on a frame the other day. See, that's the kind of stuff that it's there for you to see. I love watching carpets being cleaned, says Annette.
Wow, Annette.
Yeah. It's quite therapeutic. You get I know what she's talking about.
Jared,
that moment where it's just...
Jared says, I forgot how to have sex, so now I had to go onto the internet to remind myself of how that works. Hilton brings up, this is a channel I watch all the time. I'm subscribed to it, actually. It's a guy called Nile Red. Not Nike Red, but I think he meant Nile Red on YouTube. This guy does chemistry and incredible experiments. He's just easily the best chemical expert on YouTube, and he's very, very sharp. Does some amazing stuff too. Just even if you just want to watch what happens, it's really fun to watch. That's Nile Red, NILERED. So check that out. Very, very cool. Okay, we're out of time. We've got to get to the burning platform, which is coming up next. We will speak to our guests, none other than Brooke Spector, Ivo Fechter, and Pumi Machiho. And we'll get into all the local and international stories that are of importance and interest to you. So stick around for that and a whole lot more. It's all coming up in the Burning Platform, brought to you every week by Nando's. It's your chance to hear honest and interesting and analysis, and I suppose also some opinion on all the things that are going on in the world. And there's nothing bigger in the world at the moment in terms of news than the situation in Afghanistan, which, I mean, this word I've used to describe Afghanistan before, I'm going to use it again. That place is an absolute clusterfuck. It was 20 years ago. It still is now. And we'll look at exactly what's happening. We'll find out from our guests what they think of President Joe Biden's withdrawal, what they think of the reaction to that, what they think is in store for Afghanistan, who's going to fill the void, who's going to come and take up that vacuum of power that exists there now, and what kind of creatures are the Taliban, and what are we dealing with this time round? There's so many things to be answered. We'll get into it because I've been waiting to talk about this stuff for a very long time. So all of that and more on the way. CliffCentral.com, thank you for joining us this morning. We've got lots of good stuff on the menu. Stick around. CliffCentral.com.